Hey yo, and here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music. I am your host, Mr. Brett Podcast, and I am happy to have a gentleman that I just met a little while ago, name of Billy Schlupp. And Billy, how are you today? It's great to have you on the show because when I got a chance to meet you playing with David Reese, I mean, A, you're a fun guy, but B, you're a really talented player.
Hey Brett, hey, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it was a blast to play with David and do those shows with him. We really had a good time. I really appreciate the kind words. I hope we're able to do more shows and fun things in the summer.
So what was it that, how did you get connected with David?
Well, so I'm in a band called Arising Force, which is local here. And that is by Lenny, Demon Carey. He's the... runs that whole band, and it's kind of dormant right now. But then we had another guy named Brian Lawrenson, who was also in the band. And years ago, back in the 80s, Brian was in a band called Dare Force, and that's how he met David. And David had contacted Brian and said he wanted to come here and do some shows. And Brian had reached out to me and asked me if I'd want to take up a role on the guitar, one of the guitar players. And then from there, he asked, why don't you ask your friend Logan Lobrick to do him on the drums, because he's a good drummer and I've played in a band with him here. And then everything just kind of came together like that,
So then you live in Minnesota, and what's it like, what's the music scene like in Minnesota?
I think it was a lot better probably in the 70s and 80s. I think there were more places to play. Obviously I wasn't around then, but from what I've heard and hear from people and fellow musicians around here, I think there was more outlets for it, but I still think it's a pretty powerful scene, today. I think there's still a lot of good venues out there and a lot of good places to play. A lot of fun bars, a lot of good venues, good people too, a lot of good artists here, a lot of good musicians.
And then what's it like, I guess, when you're learning the tracks with David, for David, how long does it take you, and what are the kind of things that you look for when you're learning a track?
Well, it took me, I had a lot of time to get ready for it because we found out about this months in advance. So lucky for me. So I had some time to sit and prepare myself and kind of get everything situated. I guess I tend to look for almost like exact notes. And then maybe taking some of the notes and trying to make them a little bit how I might have played it, that's a little different from the recording, but it's kind of my own flavor on it. But I try to learn the song entirely as a whole, all the way through with all my parts. And I'll start out with just the rhythm parts. So I won't even look at a lead or a solo or anything until I know all the rhythms to everything and every song. So that's the intro to the verses, to the chorus, to the rhythm for the solo. And then once I have the rhythms down, then from that point on, I reached out to Niccolo, who was also David's guitar player full time back in Italy. And then we kind of sat down and talked about which leads to decide. But that goes for anything. I don't touch the leads at all. I'll learn all the rhythms first and then go from there.
Now, when you're playing a lead, and I guess it's the same kind of thing. Do you pull the lead and try to play it as close as it was on the record, or do you give it your own spin?
I kind of give it my own spin. I think you could probably tell a few of the songs that we did with David. I think they kept the general concept there of what maybe was on the album or written back then. But I think I kind of did my own thing with a lot of them. I didn't play any of the leads note for note.
And then, how much, input did David have into your playing? Did he really have any, or by the time, you were ready, was it just kind of like, boom, you're in and you've got to rehearse?
Pretty kind of like that. Yeah. By the time we finally all sat down in the same room and plugged in together, me and Niccolo had gotten together and, rehearsed the two of us. First, when he first came in, and then we did the three of us with Logan. And by that time, when we all got together with David, it's kind of just like, boom, everybody knew their parts, everybody was there, everything was solid, and it was just a matter of getting things really tight.
And then now, 2 days of rehearsal, is that kind of common, or is that short?
I would have loved to do more for sure if we could have, the more the better, but I think we, you know, we had long days, you know, we rehearsed for, you know, 12-hour days. So, I mean, I think it was, it got us through, you know what I mean? For sure, it got us through. As far as being common or not, I would like to think it's not common. I would think you'd probably do more, you know?
So then, you know, by the time the shows wound up, and I mean, obviously I was there and I thought they were great. How did you feel about them?
I thought they were really good. I thought given our circumstances and, you know, all the events that took place leading up to them, I think we all pulled through really well. I think everybody sounded really tight. I think David's voice sounded great. I think me and Niccolo played great, you know, for only knowing each other for, you know, a little over a week. And I think, you know, they turned out really well.
Now, is that one of those challenges that you just kind of have to accept when you're a musician, is just, you know, meeting new people and then playing with them within a short amount of time and just kind of having to pick things up on the fly?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. There's guys, I think, you know, sometimes you don't even get a rehearsal. You know, I think sometimes you just get to listen to the songs and you have to run the songs at the venue. You know what I mean? You're sitting back in the green room and, you know, with your headphones in and learning the set. You know what I mean?
How long did it take you then, I guess, to reach a point where you felt like you were confident enough to, you know, stick on your headphones and start learning a song?
Like as my career as a musician?
Yeah.
It definitely took me a while. You know, I grew up taking guitar lessons. So I started taking lessons when I was 8, and I had 2 different instructors growing up. One that taught me theory and one that taught me kind of all the shred licks, kind of rock arpeggio stuff. And I took lessons from when I was 8 years old to 18. And I really don't, I think it was when I was in high school, when I was 14 and 15, around that time was when I really started to feel, you know, I think guitar has a really big learning curve. I think you can get to a certain point and you're good, but then there's a really big curve and a hump you got to get over to really break through into that next step and next, you know, level of being an artist and musician, of being able to pick things up and hear things and just pick a note right from hearing it, you know, without even having to look at your guitar or fretboard and that kind of stuff. And I really think I started to really get in that point, you know, when I was in high school. And then I had my first band when I was in high school, and then we got to tour and do really cool stuff with that one. And then from there, you just keep getting better and better and keep practicing and love what you do. And, you know, there's still always so much to learn. You can never get everything, you know. The universe of music is just huge, and there's so much to it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that. I mean, so how much do you practice?
I practice every day. I work as a music instructor at Rogers School of Music, so that gives me, you know, I'm always picking up my guitar there at work, so I have that. And then, you know, when I come home, I either practice, but it's really nice, too, if, you know, one of my kids can't make it or there's a cancellation, I still get paid for the lesson, and I just get to sit there and practice for an hour, you know, in my studio room. So I do a lot of my practicing at work, or like a lot of my writing. And then a lot of it when I get home too, a lot of things, like when I write things, especially when you're in that moment, like you just wrote a new riff and it's just like, it comes to you just like that. You got to stay on it. Like it's like a fire and it's lit and you got to keep it going, because if I get home and I don't pick up my guitar and go back to it, I go back to bed, the inspiration and that spark is gone, and I can listen to the riff even if I recorded it and I have it, and it just doesn't hit me the same way it hit me that day before. So I always try, you know, sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and I'll be humming a riff and I'll be like, man, I'm like, this sounds really cool. I wonder if I can put this to music. And I'll put my headphones on at 2 a.m. and try to put together a song of what I was thinking in my head, you know.
How does that work out for you most of the time? Do you manage to kind of, you know, collect it before it goes away?
A lot of times, and a lot of times you don't. Sometimes I just get the riff and then I get stuck. I'm like, you know, and then you kind of get to a now where, you know what I mean? You're like, sometimes you can't find that next spot, but then some of the best songs that I've written, I've put together in less than 30 minutes, you know. It's kind of a, it, depends, you know, just how everything flows and how you're feeling. And I think a big part of it is emotion, and a lot of it is feeling. You know, I think you can't get too tied to a structure or a theory, you know, as it's all good, you know, but there's, you know, there needs to be an emotional and a feeling to your music. You know what I mean?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the thing is, right, is that the best music has that emotion and has that feeling behind it. I mean, if you were just, I mean, otherwise it's what, AI music, right?
Yeah, literally. You know, I always like to think there's two kind of guitar players. You have an impressive guitar player and you have an expressive guitar player, right? And both are really good depending what you want to do. You know, some guys like to be really, you know, 300 beat per minute arpeggio, you know, that's insane, you know, but then other guys are more expressive and emotional and have a really great, you know, you just can sit there and you're just, if you go and see them, you just feel the music, you know what I mean? And I guess I've always sprung towards the more expressive side of playing. I've always really liked the way certain guitar solos or songs make me feel, you know, you get those goosebumps on your arm and you're just like, oh my God. And then you go back and you're like, man, how did he do that? You know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I saw Carlos Santana, yeah, it was just like that. I mean, it's just, you just see him and you can tell that like the guitar is an extension of his body and every note that comes out is just like, you know, that he feels it.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Everything. He's a great player. Absolutely insane.
But then, you know, on that opposite side, right? I mean, I think of Dragon Force and their million notes a second.
Yeah, those guys. I love Dragon Force though too. Those guys are great. I mean, Herman Lee and I can't remember the other guy's name, but the two of them together, the leads are insane. I mean, both of them are just, I mean, monsters. You know, those dual lead harmonies that they do, those tapping, you know, the tapping, the arpeggios. It's nuts. There's another band that really did this stuff like that a lot too, and they're called Santa Cruz. I'm not sure if you've heard of them.
Oh, yeah, I have heard of them. But yeah.
Back in there, they had the two guys, and they would do those crazy, you know, six-string sweep sort of tap at the end, all harmonized note for note, and it was just like, God, how do they do that? That's insane.
Yeah, that feels like that would take more than 2 days of rehearsing to nail that sound.
Yeah, that would take a little while longer. Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
So then you talk about writing songs, and like when you are writing songs, like what's kind of where do those songs go right now?
Well, for now they're just kind of going saved to my phone and computer, and I'm just kind of waiting for the next, you know, I got Legacy of the Loud, which is my cover band, which is a good gigging band, and we just, you know, we gig every weekend and make money. And then I got the thing with David, which hopefully we'll be able to do more shows in the near future in summer. And then I'm also kind of looking to start up a new original project as well in my free time, you know, with some of these songs that I'm working on and writing. And, you know, for now I'm kind of just sitting on them and waiting for the right time and the right group of people to release them with. You know, I think everything has to really be in the right place at the right time, with the right group of guys, the right energy, the right everything, the right vocals, especially the vocals. You know, I think it's really important to have, you know, a catchy melody, catchy choruses, and I want somebody that I can really collaborate with and work hand in hand, you know, that guitar player and frontman relationship, you know.
What kind of frontman are you looking for? Like when it comes to voice, right? I mean, we know that there's the guys like David, I mean, who've got that great, growl, yep, and that raspy voice.
That rasp.
And then like, you know, but then there's the guys with the clean voice and stuff like that. So, I mean, what kind of voice would you be looking at? I mean, I assume it's like a metal project.
It's a metal project. Yeah. I would say 80s, you know, 80s metal. Hard rock, newer metal, you know, there's some drop tune stuff. There's some standard stuff, you know, a little more on the hair Sunset Strip side, you know, and there's some heavier songs that I'm working on too. It would be cool. I like that rasp, you know, I really do like a rasp. I think that would really bring out, you know, that drive and that punch in some of these songs. I think a lot of them are really guitar driven riffs. They're really, you know, really riff driven. And I think you really need that, you know, that big scream, that big yell to really bring it out.
Yeah, I mean, I've always, obviously that's kind of my jam, that 80s Sunset Strip era. So yes, I mean, yep. getting that like Brian Vollmer of Helix calls it whiskey voice. Yes, and I'm like, oh yeah, exactly. See, that fits.
You have a couple whiskeys and then, yeah, it really goes.
Yeah, and you know, guys like that, I mean, well, and of course you want a great front man, period, just somebody who's so good with the audience. And I mean, yep. That's probably harder to find than even the singing, I'll bet.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I would say, especially too in Minnesota, you know, it's tough to find somebody, you know, exactly. You know, you can be a great vocalist, but then you don't want somebody that's just going to stand there either. You got to include the crowd and bring that charisma and energy and to, you know, have good talking conversation and all that, you know.
Yeah, because that was something that I thought David did so well, especially in the second show with, you know, with the limited audience there and stuff
very
like that.
Well.
Now, how difficult is that for you as a performer to have, you know, a smaller crowd?
I don't really think it's difficult at all, honestly. I think big or small, you give it like you're playing in front of 5,000 people regardless. Because you got to be thankful and grateful for the people that did show up, whether it is your family and friends or your girlfriends or your wife or, you know, a few of the people that came in to check us out. You know, I think I like to always try to give my same regardless of the crowd. You know, I've played in front of crowds that were 3,000 people and I've played in front of crowds that were just my parents and family, you know, so I think we all have, you know, so I mean, it's I think you got to give it 100% of the time, all the time.
Yeah, well, and of course that's the right answer. And I think I guess when it comes to like a singer, maybe that's the harder part because, you know, they probably feed on that on the energy. Audience and that yep. Energy. Yeah,
they got the hardest job out of all of us. Yes, especially with those crowd circumstances like that, because they're definitely feeding back off of what the crowd is giving them. And if it's a smaller crowd or it's, you know, not the right energy or vibe, it's a really, really hard job to do. Really hard.
Now, have you ever had any moments where like you just felt like the show was not good at all?
Oh yeah. 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 A couple shows. There was a couple back with one of my old bands that we would do at some of the clubs here at like the Caboose in Minneapolis when we opened up for a couple bands. And it was just, you know, we were kids, you know, 17, 18, you know, just learning our gear and getting comfortable. And yeah, there were times, you know, you're hitting stuff and you're like, what's going on? You know, what the hell, you know? And so, yeah. Well, you know, another thing is too, I think you're always your own worst critic, you know, and I think you just gotta, even if you do have a bad show, you take it as a learning experience. And I always like to break it down and analyze it and be like, okay, so I did this, I did this, I did this. How can I take those things that I did wrong and now improve that for the next time we play? You know, maybe I went into the wrong box in one of the solos, or I got confused with a pedal on my pedal board. Well, let's separate the pedals out farther, or let's revisit that solo and really practice it, sort of thing, you know, and really try to fix those things and keep correcting them so they don't happen again.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, I mean, as a fan, I mean, I know that I wouldn't notice most of the time that you screwed up.
Yep. It's hard for the crowd to see, you know, and I think the biggest thing is too, is you can't let people know you screwed up, or you can't make a face, or you can't look. You just got to keep going and you just play it like you didn't. And, you know, half the time that's kind of the fun in it though, too, right? That's live music. You know, I didn't pay $30 to come see your band play to a, you know, a track. I want to see you play that live. I want to see you, if you make a mistake, that's okay, because that's what I paid to see. That's a part of being human, right? That's what makes us unique and interesting and cool, because we can't play it perfectly all the time. We can't always hit the right notes. We can't always do that, you know, and mistakes happen, you know, to the greatest of rock stars, to all of us, you know. And I think that's really an awesome factor in live music. And I think some of it in a lot of today's music is starting to go away. And it makes me sad because that was one thing I really liked when I was a kid growing up. You know, my dad took me to a lot of concerts, a lot of 80s bands, a lot of some of the newer bands coming out. And I mean, I'm sure, you know, there's always help and tracks, but I think a lot of music nowadays has become very dependent on, you know, AI and technology. And I think we're missing a big factor of that emotion and human touch that we used to have that we maybe don't have as much anymore.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I one time saw on YouTube that somebody had taken a Van Halen song, like an early Van Halen song, and actually put it to time, like the correct time. And really? Yeah, because it just wasn't like it was just a song that, you know, that was on and off and stuff like that. And so, yeah, they moved it into time and suddenly it just sounded so sterile and boring.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah, you can't be glued to the click track either. You know, that's another thing. I think that I always thought, depending what you're trying to do, of course, but the click is there to guide you and help you. I never really thought it was something I want to be dot, 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 you know, because sometimes, and I'm actually playing with a drummer right now. He's one of the, probably the best drummer in Minnesota right now. He's really, really good. He's an older guy, but, you know, sometimes it's cool to play out of the beat or in the middle of the beat, or you know, you're not always glued to that beat, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we've talked to a lot of bass players that are like that, where some you know are like get in the pocket and stay on that beat, but yeah, some totally like play off of the drums and and you know, and I think it does provide for a totally different listening experience.
Agreed, 100%.
So then what did you listen to growing up? Like what kind of made you say, I mean, 8 years old, what made you say, yeah, rock star?
I used to play, I played hockey for 5 years when I was a little kid. And my dad was a big music fan. My mother was a classical piano player for 20 years. And my dad would always put on CDs in the car and cassette tapes when he'd be driving me to hockey practice in the morning. And he'd play Kiss or Motley Crue or, you know, Judas Priest or Def Leppard and all that stuff. And you know, from there, I always really had a music kind of almost engraved in me from when I was just a little kid, you know, even before I played hockey when I was, you know, really young. I can remember my dad always had music playing in the house or in the car or wherever we were. And I didn't really like hockey and as much. And I remember my dad bought me this VHS tape of Def Leppard, Hysteria. I was at this old record shop by our house, and I'd play it repeatedly on our TV, and I'd bring down this inflatable air guitar, and I'd play all the songs to it. It was all the music videos from their 80s stuff, you know, and then eventually I ended up saying I wanted to learn guitar, and I took that up, and then my folks got me lessons and gave me a really great upbringing and, you know, helped mentor me. And, you know, help me get gear and kind of build me into, you know, what we're trying to build today, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, I think how important is that, you know, the support of family when it comes to learning an instrument?
I think it's really important, you know, and I have a really, really strong backbone and supportive family. My girlfriend is really, really supportive and, you know, my number one fan by my side. My mom and dad are really supportive. My aunt and uncle are always at every show right there, you know, supporting. We rehearsed in my aunt and uncle's basement for 5 years, you know, multiple times a week too. I bet they loved that, huh? Yeah. They couldn't wait for those days for us to show up after they worked for 12 hours. So we're going to go make some noise, you know? But no, they've all been really, really supportive, everybody in the family and all my friends. And it's, I think it really helps. I think it drives a really positive impact into, you know, wanting to keep going and strive to, you know, play music.
And is that kind of the same thing that you see with a lot of the students that you have, is that they have like, you know, good family, you know, backing, or do you even see that much?
You do. I think a lot of it too. I see with a lot of my kids. I have a couple kids that are, they're older, they're in high school, and they remind me a lot of me. Like they're really, you know, they're driving for it. I always, you know, tell them, you know, it shouldn't be practice. You should just love doing it, right? You don't practice video games. You love playing video games, you know? So if you love something, it shouldn't feel like you're oh, I got to wake up and practice my guitar. You know, it's, you want to go play it. You love it. You want to get lost in the music and watching YouTube videos. And there's a couple of them like that. But then, you know, I think a lot of them just do it as a hobby too. And that's fine, you know, and it's okay to do it as just something fun to bring to, you know, Christmas or Easter or a camping trip and bring your acoustic out and play, you know, a couple songs, you know?
Yeah, it's so hard because like, so I used to play guitar a long time ago and I really wanted to, you know, stay with it and stuff like that. And then I injured my finger. And so I couldn't actually play for a while. And so then, you know, life got in the way. And so I stopped playing. And especially of late, like, I've just been like, oh man, I really want to play again. You know, there's this like, no, I have a business. I can't. Like right now I have to deal with all the rock stars. So it's
like, I have no time. That's not a bad job though, man. That's pretty dang cool. That's pretty awesome, you know.
But yes, I just, unfortunately, it's like I can't take that time yet, and I keep feeling like.
Revisited. Sometime. How long did you play guitar for when you did?
I was probably like, you know, I probably got about a year and a half or 2 years, and so. Nice. So it wasn't bad. I still have my guitar here. Nice. You know, it's stayed with me for all the years, but.
And hang on to it, man. Hang on to it.
Poor thing, never gets used, but I'll hang it up someday and at least it'll look cool.
Yeah, that's right. You can put it in a glass case so it rotates around.
Yeah. So how many guitars do you have?
Boy, I have about, I got some friends too, probably about 14 that I can count right now. I got a Les Paul, a lot of 80s and vintage Charvels, a couple 80s Kramers. I have an 80s Hamer. I have a Gibson V, and then a couple newer Charvels too, a couple of the newer remakes that they did, and then a San Dimas as well.
So then how do you choose, like, how did you choose which ones to play with David?
Well, I really liked, you know, really liked David's sound and thought it really had a very, some of the songs are, you know, harder rock and just straight up metal, and then some of them were a little bit more of that 80s hair, you know, and I think I picked the Charvels for those ones because I think they really always bring out a really nice crisp tone, and the Seymour Duncan sound great out of the, you know, the tube amp, and they provide a really nice, just well-rounded the sound, I think, you know, as well as the Gibsons do too.
So it's interesting, like, you talk about like the tube amp and stuff like that, like, you know, I mean, what's it like what's your opinion? I mean, I know that like Alice Cooper's band has gone like largely digital in their, you know, in like the amps and the stacks kind of thing to keep space down. And, you know, what's your opinion on like digital amps and that?
I think I personally like the tubes. I think it's a personal preference, honestly. I think there's a lot of really great digital platforms out there. You know, Kempers sound really good. Axe FX sounds really good. There's a lot of really great stuff. I tried diving into that world, and it wasn't for me. I didn't like building a sound on a computer. I didn't like taking, having to tune my treble and my bass with my finger, you know, pushing it up on a touch screen. I didn't like that. I like to actually sit there and feel the air being pushed through my cab and crank that speaker all the way up and really just dial it all the way and really find what works. But I think there's a lot of good platforms out there. And I think it's for people that are probably more patient too, to really sit with those kind of, you know, amps and really dial something in, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, I guess anything like that is such a learning curve, and you have to be willing to, you know, accept that learning curve.
Yep. Yep. You do. It was definitely a learning curve, and I kept it too. I still like it. I actually really quite enjoy it for when I do demos at home on my computer. And it's really nice because I can just, you know, have a direct out and I plug everything right in and I can really dial in a quite nice tone, you know, better than if you had like an old combo amp or something. You know, that there's a lot more options on those, you know, pedal boards and those Kempers and stuff like that. And they're really nice. I think from a live setting, I do enjoy having the stack, but, you know, that could change at some point too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine like, I know what kind of effort it was just to bring the Marshalls in for the David concerts. So, oh. I mean, I can't imagine like, you know, constantly doing that.
Yeah. I think after a while, you know, I'm still young yet in my early 20s, but I'm sure after doing it for years and years and years, you probably get really sick of it really fast. Yeah, I understand it. Like, I'm just going to the board and throwing it in my suitcase. We're done. You know, which is, it is really nice, honestly, if you think about that, that they have that now. I mean, as far as traveling wise, you know, if you have to fly somewhere, I mean, they literally can throw them in a suitcase and throw them on a plane and you're in, you know, some of these, you know, amp modelers that they have now. And I mean, they sound really good. They really do. You know, a lot of them, and you have, your options are limitless. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
But for now, I like the tube amp, and I actually just ended up getting a big endorsement with Engel Amps out in Germany. So I've been repping that brand and communicating with those guys, and they've been really cool and great to work with. And I love the Engels, man. I think they sound really powerful. They have a lot of tone to them. They're really crisp and just, they're great amps, really well made. I really love it a lot.
How did you, come to become sponsored by them?
I actually reached out to them through email and sent them, an EPK, and ended up getting in touch with the artist relations, and we just kind of went from there. And it took a little over a year until we were all said and done with everything, and got, you know, the post and, you know, the social media's up and on the website and all that stuff. And but yeah, it's great. They're great guys over there.
Yeah, I mean, because I remembered those posts coming out right around that same time that you were playing with David. Yep. So
yeah, I tried to kind of line it up to have kind of a double win, you know, promote the David shows and also kind of have that angle in there as well, which I, when I talked to those guys about scheduling that, is I kind of wanted to do it around that time coming up for the shows with Dave.
Now, is there other types of things that you would be looking for, like guitars, strings, those kind of things?
Yeah, strings. Strings would be a nice one for sure, you know, but I haven't came across that. But I do have a couple other ones. I have one with a cable company called Tsunami Cables. They make arguably one of the best cables in the industry, and they have a lifetime warranty, and I love them. They're great. And I also have Intune Guitar Picks, so I do have that one. And then FU Tone as well, which make like Hardware and Floyd Rose upgrades. And I mean, they make really, really, really top-notch good stuff. I mean, sustain blocks, you know, titanium nuts, bridge saddles. I mean, your options are endless with them. And I mean, you could basically, if you wanted, build your own bridge, you know, to your likings and custom specifications and put it on your guitar.
Wow. Is that something that you kind of have an interest in, is like the parts of the guitar and building it out?
Not as much. No, I send them off to somebody to do all that for me. I have a guy here. He's really good. He does all my upgrades and work for me and setups and all that. But, you know, small stuff like adjusting the, you know, saddles or new strings on something is, you know, that's easy to do. But as, you know, far as a really in-depth setup and cleaning on something or getting something looked at, it doesn't interest me that much yet.
Yeah, well, it's like George Lynch, right? I mean, like, now, I mean, that's, I feel like it's practically like he builds more guitars than he plays half
Mr.
the time.
Scary Guitars. Yeah. They make great stuff. Yeah, he is in that whole building business. That's really cool.
I know, and I mean he's such a character to talk with anyways, but I mean like one time we did an
Absolutely.
interview with him and he was actually building a guitar at the same time as he
No
was doing it.
way.
So there would just be these moments and he'd be talking and then you'd hear like him put the mask on and suddenly he's like talking like this and then you'd hear the spraying of the spray paint.
That's great. I love
It's just like, well, that's
it.
weird, George, but you're George
That's
List, so
awesome.
who cares?
Multitasking, huh? Multitasking. I love it.
So anyways, what is the future now for Billy Schlump? And like, I mean, you kind of told me a little bit, but like, the next couple of weeks, the next 6 months, the next year kind of thing.
Well, I'm working, so I'm in a new band too. We're kind of keeping it on the down low for now, but I was telling you I'm playing with a new drummer, arguably one of the best here in Minnesota, and we're working on some new songs, and that's going to be more of an experimental kind of really rock driven, maybe some jazz. It's just kind of it's really we're really you know we're keeping it on a mainstream rock level, of course, but I think more progressive rock. Some really weird time signatures, some really weird kind of grooves and beats, kind of on the line of like Lost Lobotomies or kind of Dream Theater like. So I'm working on that right now. So that's been keeping me busy, and I'm hoping to do some more shows with David in the summer. I know we'll kind of see what that brings, and hopefully that could bring us, maybe a month of gigs, if not more. And then I also am working on the new original project too that I'm working on getting started up with the fellow drummer too from David Reese, Logan Lobrick.
Oh, nice.
So we're working on songs and writing right now, and we're kind of just sitting on a pool of a bunch of, basically fully written songs that really just need vocals. So we're just kind of searching and taking our time right now and just kind of seeing who's out there and who might be a good fit for some of these songs that we have. And we've jammed with a couple people, and we're just gonna, take it slow, and when the right time comes, it will. And then I also have the cover band, so that I gig with, basically every weekend, two, three times a week. And then teaching music still full time at the school.
So which cover songs do you play? Like, what are your favorites to play?
Yeah, I tell you what, we do a really cool cover of "Sun." I wear my sunglasses at night, like a metal version
Excellent.
of it. And we do this, me and the other guitar player Mixter. We do this really cool dual lead harmony of like the chorus melody "Sun," but we're doing it, on thirds on our guitar, and it's really cool because we just hold it out, and then we just go into a, just a total shred fest back and forth, every 2 to 4 bars, something like that. And that's honestly probably got to be my favorite one because it always, people are always like, oh, they're playing this one, because typically we do 70s and 80s rock, Journey, Foreigner, Poison, Whitesnake, all that kind of typical stuff. But then we and that's in there too, but that was kind of more on that pop side, poppier side of things, and it's cool because we just totally just metal it up.
And I love Corey Hart and I love sunglasses at night. So, that
Great song.
I need to hear you guys play that. Like, there's no question.
I think I got a couple videos. I'll have to send you one. It's
That would be
they're
great
it's
because,
interesting. It's fun.
yes, I actually remember one time seeing Corey Hart, and of course because I've seen him a few times, but like, and he came out and he had a boom box and he took the boom
Yep.
box and he hit play. And it was that original like dun 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 dun, kind of the keyboard and that kind of thing. And then after just like a little bit of that, then the band broke in and it became more of a guitar version of the song.
Nice. That's awesome. That's great.
So
Yeah,
yeah,
Corey
it's
Hart's
like,
amazing.
oh,
Astonishing.
totally. What a talent.
Just great.
Yep.
He is really, really good.
Well, Billy, thank you so much for coming on the show. I've appreciated it. And it's so much fun to talk to you, and it's so much fun to hear you play. So I do hope that I get the chance to see you again soon.
Thank you so much, Brett. I really appreciate your time and the interview. Thank you so much.
Hey, no problem. I hope that all your bands work out, and I know we'll talk again, but for right now, I wish you nothing but the best in the future.
Thank you. You as well. Have a great rest of your night.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Right. Bye now.